though most of the time I'll be restricting to a chain, like a path graph, but I'll also speak about more general graphs in two particular contexts. So one is trying to communicate between the vertices of a graph through dynamics, okay? And the other is trying to see what kind of entanglement exists when the ground state, the lowest energy eigenstate of such a graph, okay? So these are the two kind of areas I'll talk about. Okay, so this is our group. It's a growing group at UCL, so you also see someone else who's familiar, okay? And these are more or less the people present now, but we hope it will grow further. Okay, so the talk will have two parts. The part A will be concerned with state transfer through graphs. Okay? So the idea is as follows. You have a graph, okay, where the links denote interactions, and the vertices denote quantum systems. They could be qubits or any other kinds of quantum systems, and the links between them are the interactions between them. And the target is to see if you place some kind of information, and in this case, we are interested actually in quantum information. So if you place a quantum state, or you prepare a quantum state, one of these quantum systems in a certain quantum state, how that information propagates due to the interactions which are in the links. That's the question. And typically, what will happen, because all these links represent interactions, and this is a cartoon of a state being placed, like, yeah, it's a delta function. In that sense, this is the cartoon that you have put something on, say, this quantum system. And then what happens, also another cartoon, but what happens is this state which had been placed will kind of both propagate and disperse, okay? So if I go back one slide, okay? We had placed it here, but due to the interactions, the state will flow through the graph. And in general, it has been shown as smaller wave packets, mean in the sense that the amplitude will, in general, get distributed through the graph. And after a while, for certain graphs, it might happen that it comes back, constructively interferes, and comes back with a high amplitude to a certain point. And this is the kind of transfer of information that we want to make, and we would like to see how it happens in different kinds of graphs, okay? So it is the dynamics which is transferring the thing, okay? Another problem we are going to look at is just more towards the end of the talk, that's part B of the talk, maybe the last 10 minutes or something, is a slightly different issue, where again you have the same similar graph, also with interactions and quantum systems, okay? But we now look at a different problem. For certain signs of the interaction, for example, the state of the quantum systems in that graph, continuously interacting quantum systems in thermal equilibrium, when they're at a very low temperature, so that they're nearly in their lowest energy eigenstate, could be a state with lot of inherent entanglement already inside, okay? And these entanglements have been shown here by these red dashed lines. Okay. For example, you could have several bipartite entanglements, you could have some kinds of tripartite entanglement, and in general, the graph of the entanglement could be very different from the graph of the interactions. Okay. We cannot tell apparently. They may be related, but they could be different. But this is a kind of stuff I'll go through in the last 10 minutes probably, just what kind of entanglement. And since the particular thing we look at is that, and that is kind of motivated by things like localizable entanglement and cluster states, the thing we look at is if we measure a few of these quantum systems, whether we can project the rest onto a nice known multipartite entangled state. Okay, now to come to the motivation of the part A of the talk, okay? It is motivated by the fact that in the near future, at least, when we do build quantum registers, we will just build small quantum registers in the near future. For example, we could have something like 8 qubits. And typically, to make it into a larger quantum computer, what people would be needing to do is to be able to transfer qubits and entanglement between such registers. This is more or less now accepted that this is going to be the architecture for computers in the near future. And usually what people envisage in doing this transfer is to use photons. That's why in physics it's an important problem to convert things like qubits, which are stationary in a computer, could be solid state qubits or ions, to light and vice versa. However, alternatives are also important. Particularly, for example, in ion trap, people think of physically moving a qubit by shuttling from one register to another. So alternatives are important. And typically, the kind of alternative that I am proposing here, whether it's a good alternative or not remains for the future to see. But the kind of alternative I would like to look at is the following. So don't literally take the word computer. I mean, this was written in, this slide was written quite a few years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And since then, I think it's better to, I was much too optimistic at that time. But really what one should say is quantum registers, okay? So we are trying to connect to quantum registers, small registers, and say you have a spin chain, okay? What is a spin chain? I'll explain soon. But basically a linear array of spins interacting with each other, and information is launched from one of the quantum registers and can reach the other register. So the point here is we avoid interconversion between things like solid state qubits and photons. We use the same kind of physical system to connect. But the virtue of the fact that it's a wire, we require no or limited control on it. We would like to do it without any control. So quickly to say what spin chains are. They are one-dimensional array of quantum systems. Okay, I'm defining it very broadly. Could be qubits, Q3s, anything, and that they are perpetually interacting. Okay, that the interactions are frozen in time. They're never switched on and off. And there are many examples of such things in this world. Particularly, spin chains have been used as models of magnets for a long time. And these days, people have materials, two-dimensional materials, where connections between chains are very weak. So it's actually good approximation as 1D chains. So these are quasi-1D magnets. People can artificially fabricate them in Josephson junction arrays, quantum dot arrays, optical lattices. And we have also shown recently you can have them if you can couple cavities and things like that. So there are lots of realizations. Now, another motivation for studying such a thing relates to the fact that typically the states of spin chains could be different depending on the interactions. Okay? So it's one kind if it's a ferromagnet where the sign of interactions are negative, so that spins try to align with each other. There could be other kinds of systems where spins try to anti-align with each other, and then depending on the symmetry of the interactions, you can have strange kinds of states here as well. And so this connects to physics. How well such things can act as a quantum data bus will tell you something about the state inside, or at least if it depends on what the state inside is, that will be an interesting thing to study. Provides a different perspective. Another motivation for this thing is our controls. And this is a motivation with which my student Daniel Burgart came up with when he was writing his thesis, is that even when we build quantum computers, our controls are very macroscopic, right? We have macroscopic controls. And so we can hone down on very few qubits individually at a time, right? So even if we had these many control qubits at our disposal, in principle, we could not go down to control all of them. So it would be ideal to separate high control regions with regions of no or low control, just because you cannot have that many handles going in from our big world to the small world there. And then this is automatically what we can call a spin chain. So this motivates the thing that how you can transfer between this register and that register. So I will start by looking at the simplest possible situation. So we take, this is a spin chain. and we assume certain properties of it. Okay, first of all, the interactions are just nearest neighbor. Okay, now the terminology nearest neighbor created some issue in dinner table yesterday, as I remember. So what we have is a path graph. Okay, it's a path graph between that and that set. Now we will assume that the interactions, these are all qubits, okay, quantum two-state systems, and we will assume that the interactions between them are isotropic. And what is the simplest interaction you can get between two, one of the simplest things you can get between two qubits in the isotropic case, just to not give preference to any direction or other, is just an exchange, okay? So an isotropic exchange is actually, apart from an identity, is just this operator over here. These are the Pauli operators, x, y, and z, and x plus y cross y plus z is the swap operator apart from an identity, okay? So that's the Hamiltonian. And we also assume that the Hamiltonian is, well, I say nearest neighbor or path graph, so the, I mean, the, this spin interacts only with this and not with that one. Okay, so I plus one is the interactions. For simplicity, we assume it's uniform. There's no module. The couplings are the same strength throughout. And also, this is an assumption we make to have a simple initial state of this wire. Okay, so this chain is what we want to use to transfer quantum information. And we said that it will depend also on the state that is actually already in the wire. Okay, so the state of the quantum system which formed the wire. And to assume a very simple starting state, we can assume it to be ferromagnetic, which means that this constant J is negative, which means actually spins try to align each other to lower their energy. So if you apply the slight magnetic field, then the lowest energy state, they would be all aligned, and that would be a simple starting state. Okay? And then all you do is you place latch on the quantum state to be transferred at one end of the chain. Okay? This is the start of the protocol. And then all you do is wait. Okay. Well, what Alice and Bob, all they do is just wait. And after a while, at an optimal time, Bob will pick the state up from the other end of the chain. Okay. In general, the whatever reaches on Bob's side, the state which reaches on Bob's side will be a function of time, right? So Bob has to pick it up only at an optimal time. So let us consider the problem in a bit more detail. What happens when you latch on a state at one end of a spin tail? Consider the state to be cos theta by 2, 0 plus sin theta by 2, 1 state. So for one of these cases, when you want to transfer 0, because of choosing the special initial state as the starting state, the system remains in its ground state, okay, in its lowest energy eigenstate. So literally nothing happens, okay, this state does not evolve. The other component of the superposition, the up, is like a spin flip. So it's like a one in a background of zeros, okay, so all zeros and one, a state like that. And that is the only thing which will evolve, okay. So the initial state makes the solution, the calculation of the problem very simple. And everything depends really on the amplitude of a flip being in one end, which I denote as bold one, means the flip at one end, rest zeros, to reach at bold end, which means the flip is at the receiver's end, Bob, with the rest being zeros. Okay? The dynamics that we consider, this xx plus yy plus zz, is something which does not create new ones, yeah? It just changes the position of the one in this background of zeros. And everything just depends on this particular amplitude. Okay? This point that this basis is sufficient to use, a single flip with rest zero is sufficient to use, will become important later when I show how the, all the, for general graphs, how these are connected to the theory of graphs. It's easier to connect if you're restricting to such a subspace, right? In general, of course, so this is the, in general, the state in Bob's side will be a mixed state. Why? Because of two reasons. First of all, there's what I showed in the picture before, there is dispersion. At every point, this excitation or this spin flip, the one in the background of zeros, can hop both backwards and forwards. So in generally it spreads out, and this is what we call dispersion. At in general time, the spin flip will be somewhere in the middle, will not necessarily, there's an amplitude for it to be in the middle and not yet having reached Bob's side. So that will, that causes two things. First of all, there's a mixing, there's a chance that there's nothing, okay? And then even when there is something, it will get damped, okay? These are the two effects of the general state on Bob's side. And what we call, this is what is called an amplitude damping channel. This is indeed what happens when you say, send a photon through a fiber, okay? And you encode the information to the absence, in the absence of the photon and presence of a photon. So the photon getting absorbed is analogous to the photon being somewhere inside the chain. So this is called an amplitude damping channel. And that's what, in the current, the protocol I say, that's what this chain, that's the kind of channel which results from the arrangement I showed. Okay? In general, of course, it's function of time and imperfect, but there are some nice results that chains of length 4 and 8, for example, are very, very nearly perfect. Okay, so you can see 4 there and 8 there, okay? The case of the 2 being the first, and that's a known trivial case. Okay? But 4 and 8 are interesting, and these are things people could possibly verify when they have a preliminary, like, 8-qubit quantum register. This is a nice thing to see, that from one into another, a flip is sent with very, very high fidelity. The problem, that the fact that this is a numerical plot after in a long time interval optimizing Bob's reception, is the fact that as longer you wait, in general it gets better, but there are absolutely no promises, okay? So you might wait for some values, you might go on waiting, it never improves. For some values, they go on waiting and it improves somewhat. Daniel Burgart actually analyzed this, and it's not a published thing. He looked for a while, searched for a while, just numerically, and seemed like for prime number chains, always it got better after waiting sufficiently long. But we, the longer you wait, it got better. But we don't have clear explanations for such the number dependencies here. Exponential.
Are you sure what
we can expect in the next slide?
If you're doing a very long chain, right? I mean, it's kind of the same as
chains. Yeah, it's not exponential really. It's kind of 1/. So I'll show you. I mean, here, since the amount of time you wait is not fixed, so you cannot tell where, you cannot. So so how it decays really depends on how long you wait, right? And of course, it's not reasonable to wait for like the recurrence time, or I mean, we are even demanding something like a half recurrence time. So we are not even demanding recurrence time. So there's no promises. But what one can, okay, so here we can show something, and it is definitely not exponential. Okay. So what can happen is, under the, so you keep the previous protocol exactly like I showed before, except what you do, the instead of putting in the quantum state at one end, what you do is you prepare a entangled pair, okay, and you hold one of it in your hand. So Alice holds this in her hand and puts in part half of the state into the channel. Okay, this is very standard in quantum information anyway. You send half of an EPR pair through a channel. This is what we look at. And if you have that, then in order of the minimal time that one should like wait, okay, one there should be allowed n hops to receive at the minimal to reach the other end. Okay, you cannot do less than that. That may not be the optimal time, but if you actually waited for n hops, so you chose your time, okay, you do not want to kind of wait for that long, only linear in time, then if you calculate the entanglement of the thing held at hand with the thing that has been transmitted, which is received by Bob, according to a certain measure of entanglement, say concurrence, then it can be, goes down as cube root of n. Okay. So not exponential, but so for a 1,000 spin chain, you get entanglement quantified by concurrence equal to 1. Then. However,
there's a neighbor that gets very complicated immediately.
Probably, yeah, I haven't,
we have considered dipolar chains, and there the graph is very different, but only twins to small dipolar. Now, of course, this protocol is not very good.
Because what one has to do to transmit information is from one quantum register to the other, one repeatedly has to send half of EPR pairs and then do entanglement distillation. And you know that can involve a lot of effort. So it may not be the most practical way to do it, okay? Now there are some clever ways suggested also for doing this thing. So first suggestion, and in this suggestion actually Andrew is also involved, who is there. So they suggested that maybe you engineer the couplings of the chain, okay? So they are stronger in the middle and weaker towards the ends. And these kind of chains do not only a state transfer, but they do something even more, that they completely mirror invert the state above the medium, okay? So an interesting question is, yeah, what can we do without the engineering? Because of physics limitations, maybe this is an important question to ask. But nonetheless, this is a very interesting thing. And later on, when we speak about graphs, I'll come back to this topic again, okay? This particular thing. Now, another idea is to use a wave packet, okay? Like we encode the one as a Gaussian wave packet. And then that kind of wave packet can flow perfectly from one end to another, okay? So this is also a clever way of sending the thing. And what is essentially what this means is that the qubit is encoded in many spins. So the question we can ask is, can we do with a lesser number of spins? So can we avoid both engineering and a lesser number of spins is a question. There are at least two other broad classes of interesting ideas. So one is to use a gapped system and very weakly coupled qubits to it, okay? Then there's kind of an effective interaction between those two qubits. And then those some schemes have been suggested. Of course, there the transfer takes a very long time, okay? That's kind of there. The other is to use not the kind of chain I was suggesting, like XX plus YY plus ZZ, but kind of to use an isotropic chain, so an Eisenstein, only the ZZ. And then if you had modulations, but not individual modulations, kind of a global field shining on it, then as some work which Robert has done before, and also Fitzsimmons and Twombly, and they have shown even more that you can do quantum computation with this thing. But at least minimally, you can also kind of transfer a state perfectly from one to another. Now, I will tell about a protocol here where actually you do not need engineered couplings, neither do you need a very long encoding, okay? What you do is you can just use a two-qubit encoding. And this is a very standard encoding for amplitude damping channels anyway. But what you do is you just encode your zeros and ones as down up and up down instead of on a in two rails. And we require these rails to be identical, okay, but uncoupled. Okay, so there are two spin chains which are both more or less uniform. You duplicate them, okay, and you encode the information in two of them. So the up down and down off spins are denoted here as red blue and blue red. And the point is that they will have the same dispersion in both the chains. So what you can do at the receiving end after a while is kind of a parity measurement. And if you are successful, then nothing about the alpha and beta is revealed, okay? You only know whether you have a red-blue or a blue-red, but and you distinguish it from two blues. You just find the presence of a red, but you don't find where it is, okay? Then the quantum information is not destroyed, but its arrival is heralded. So when you get one red, but don't know where it is, you know the quantum information is there. And then the state is transmitted perfectly, okay? Of course, one also needs to decode it from the dual rail to single rail. All that can be combined to one operation with just a C naught at the receiving end and measuring one of the, yeah.
I want to interrupt you in the middle of the sentence, so please.
Yeah, so could we just combine into a C naught at the receiving end and the measurement of this thing which automatically decodes and gets the state perfectly. So what we have done is converted the previous partial fidelity to a probability of success. But when you are successful, you get the exact state. Okay. Yeah, so
So can you have a kind of a Zeno effect here, in the sense that when you measure to test for arrival, that that actually postpones the arrival?
Yeah. It's a very interesting question. So in this paper, this particular paper, we looked only at snapshot measurements at certain intervals. But we have looked last year in a paper where you have the measurement continuously on. Okay? So it's a continuous time measurement of a weak strength. Okay? And in that case, if the measurement strength was too large, the state did not arrive. Okay, so there's optimal strength for each. The comparison of strength, that strength is with the strengths of these couplings. So indeed, there is a, but in our model here, where we just do snapshot measurements at repeated intervals, probably there also one can see if we were doing the measurements too frequently, then that would happen. I think so. Now, there is more to this chain which comes out from this kind of dual Rayleigh encoding, is that, of course, unlike the case of the photon, the information is not lost to the environment. We did not assume any environment here, right? There was only the chain. And when we have not received it, it is still lingers somewhere in the chain. So all you do is you wait for a while and measure it again. You wait for some other time and measure it again. And eventually you will succeed. And to succeed, you don't really have to wait for as long as the recurrence time of the chain, because you are doing something very active at the end. Now, we call this an amplitude delaying channel, because the amplitude always comes out. It's not like amplitude damping channel. And in fact, it comes out at a pretty reasonable time. So even slightly less than n squared is the time that you require for the, if you demand a certain error, okay, then this is the time at which you will receive it with probability greater than that. Now, let us look at a slightly different case. So the graph remains exactly the same. That's still the path graph, okay? The linear chain. Now, we have just started with a different initial state in the middle, okay? As I told you, in this setting, each of the vertices of the graph, or each of the vertices of the chain have a quantum system, okay? And we started with a simple state earlier where everything was down, okay? But one could start with a different system, which is motivated by the fact that in the coupling I showed before, if this coupling constant J was negative, then spins would actually try to anti-align each other. At the same time, the coupling had complete rotational symmetry. So in fact, they cannot choose a specific direction. So what will happen is that when you take the lowest energy state of such a system to minimize the energy, it goes to something which is called a global singlet. Okay, so it's like a spin zero state of the whole thing where the spins are could be entangled with each other. Okay? And that's called the antiferromagnetic ground state. And we look at the same transmission procedure as before through that state. Okay? And why could this be interesting is because here there's already some entanglement inside, and we look at the transmission of entanglement and see how it goes through. It might be interesting. The most important difference is here there's a symmetry. So unlike before, we started from a symmetry broken state, okay? For simplicity, we started with all zeros and a single one. This helped us that it became an amplitude damping channel. The zero was trivially transmitted and only the one decayed, okay? But if you start with a state which has perfect rotational symmetry, nothing is preferred, right? So it will, by definition, it will be what we call a depolarizing channel. So not an amplitude damping channel anymore. And let us look at what interesting differences come back. We look at the protocol of Alice holding one part of an EPR in hand, putting one into the chain. Okay, we look at that kind of thing. And this is the comparison of the two kinds of things. So if we started with this polarized all zero background, what we call the ferromagnetic chain, then that would transfer in this following continuous way. This is the entanglement, the blue one, and the red is the purity. While if you have a antiferromagnet, then the entanglement transfers this way, okay? So it has blips, zero all the other time, and in general rises to a higher value than the ferromagnet. Okay, this is for a certain length of chain. I don't remember now what, but could be 6, could be 10. So we only did for even lengths, for finite lengths, okay? Now, this is also not that difficult to explain. What happens here is that, as I told you, that the channel is
just depolarizing. So the best it does is it mixes any state you transmit through it with an identity. Okay, the only thing it does is that. And of course, the entanglement of that state, when it becomes finite, the slope of does not need to be zero, right? That's right. So as soon as p exceeds 1/3, it comes into being. And that's why you have this kind of sharp peaks. This is pretty much the only thing we can explain. We cannot explain any of the other things, but we see them from numerics, and these are the other things. Okay? For example, the time, okay, takes much longer in ferromagnet compared to antiferromagnet when we demand a certain fidelity. Okay? So it's faster. Antiferromagnets are faster. The entanglement transmitted is much higher. So when you transmit through the polarized background, the ferromagnet, when the entanglement is getting zero, it's still quite a high value for this other initial state. And purity is also much higher, okay, if that helps. That may help in purification and other things. And though the transmission here is imperfect, okay, it is still of interest because, of course, you can always use things like quantum error correction. And even there's a paper now which says that you can use quantum error correction efficiently in transmissions, in these kinds of transmissions. So whatever be your the state, the channel that you transmit through, you can, it's always important to have a nascent channel which is better. Okay, so the antiferromagnet is a better nascent channel. Now transmission also takes place in a kind of interesting way through it. If you had just a channel of two spin channel, that would be just in a singlet, in an up down minus down up state, and you want to transmit an EPR pair, they just oscillate like this, okay? The oscillation takes place only between these two configurations. And this is generalized in the sense that then, so this zero dashed is the qubit held in Alice's hand. It never gets entangled with any of the odd sites. Okay, it only gets ever entangled with the even sites. So it kind of hops through the chain. And again, we do not have a good explanation, but we have numerics up to 20. Now, to connect it to the topic of this conference, okay, how about state transfer through more general graphs? Okay, there has been a lot of work in this area already, and most of the work is known for a model where the ZZ term is taken off. Okay, so it is X cross X plus Y cross Y over the edges of a graph. And in this case, in the single excitation sector, so this is why when I told you some time ago that all you have is a single one and rest zeros, okay? And the Hamiltonian, this Hamiltonian as well as the one I showed before, have the property that it doesn't change to other subspace. So always the basis of everything zero but one, a single one flip is a good basis. And when you have that, then indeed this is equivalent to just twice the adjacency vector. So you can connect easily to something of the graph, okay, property of the graph. And what is known, okay, so this is again work by Andrew and others. Well, it's also in the same paper. But essentially, if you have hypercubes, then you can transmit from one corner to the other. So like between antipodes, you can do perfect state transfer, okay? And indeed, by projecting such hypercubes to a line, they obtain their engineered couplings chain. Okay. Somewhat more recently, people have shown that you can add extra edges to the hypercube as well. Okay, and it still works, but the sites between which you transmit changes. Okay. Now, also there is work by Simone in this topic. So he considered what are called circulant graphs. And so I don't go into the definition, but they have certain, in this case, it has next to nearest and next to next to nearest. Well, I'm again doing using very physics terminology, but this is, say, the graph. And for such graphs, they were able to show that you don't have any perfect transfer when there are odd number of vertices. Yeah. So this is some result in that direction. Now, something which we have, which is some results we just got about a month ago when Simone was visiting us in London for a day is the following, that suppose you, so, and this is what we hope to work more on when we are here, is the following thing. So we now go back and we take the full interaction with the full isotropic interaction, the ZZ as well, okay? Then what happens is, suppose you have a fully connected graph, and you, in general, if you have a fully connected graph with an interaction like this, okay, the transmission is pretty bad, okay? If n is the number of vertices, as you increase the number of vertices, it's 2 by n, okay? This amplitude of the modulus of the transfer amplitude is just 2 by n, okay? So it becomes much worse as you increase the number of vertices. But interestingly, if you just cut one vertex, okay, say between 1 and 2, then you have a perfect transfer between them, okay? And here is the, okay, here is another connection of this particular Hamiltonian, which is the full Hamiltonian xx plus yy plus zz with standard graph theory, is that actually this Hamiltonian is equal to the, is proportional to the Laplacian operator of the graph, okay? So like the part without the zz is proportional to the adjacency matrix, this is proportional to the Laplacian. So in fact, for the state transfers, what you really need to know always are the eigenstates and eigenvalues. So if you have the eigenstates and eigenvalues of Laplacians of a few graphs, you can easily work out state transfer through them. And typically, these are different, the adjacency matrix and the Laplacian, for non-symmetric graphs, okay? This is why this case is interesting, okay? This is not a symmetric graph anymore, as soon as you have this edge cut. And that's why it really depends whether the ZZ is present or not. These are tabulation of some results. There is, again, a kind of number dependence. Typically, for multiples of 4, you have perfect transfer. Not so perfect, but quite high, okay, for other values. So as soon as you cut an edge between those two vertices, you have very high fidelity transfer. It goes up to such high values from 2 by n. Okay, and as you go to really higher and higher n, almost any n gives perfect transfer, okay, because obviously, because then like 100 and 101 and 99 wouldn't be that different, right? So, and 100 is a multiple of 4, so they kind of all give perfect. We do not have yet a good explanation of this number dependence on the 4, but it should be a very simple explanation given the simple nature of these graphs. And this is something we will think more about. But what is also interesting is that if you do more edge deletions, okay, so you delete another edge which has no common vertex, okay, and you can go on doing this. And the way the perfect transfer of state from 1 to 2 is not at all affected if you delete these further edges. You can go on doing that. Even the time variation is not at all affected. Okay, so this is why there should be a simple explanation of this. We'll look about that, but it's not yet there. But we hopefully there will be. And of course, from symmetry, all these pairs can accomplish perfect transfer with each other. Okay. So now, as I promised, in the last 10 minutes, I shift to a slightly different topic. Okay, from this dynamical state transfer, I'm now shifting to an entirely different topic. Again, we have the same kinds of graphs, quantum systems at each vertex, and interactions on the edges, but we look at the lowest energy eigenstate, okay, the ground state of the system, and we want to see what kind of entanglement is already present in that ground state. So physically, if you chill a system to very, very low temperatures, you will prepare the system to such a state, okay? So this is taking this with a pinch of salt, but if we were to think that you could really have architectures of interacting spins on a substrate and you could pull them, this could serve as an automator for preparing certain states. Now, if you really had very simple, so this is a very old work I refer to here, is say you had spin halves in each of the vertices, then the state, you know, it's very simple to think that, especially if you're a physicist, it's a very simple thing. So they will form a kind of, you have a, you know, these three together form kind of an effective spin, and it will be like a singlet between the middle and the outside. And so the state, the ground state, will be something as I have shown before. Typically, we'll have symmetric states of all these three spins. So if you had three spins, you could prepare a W state by projecting. Prepare the system in the ground state and project, and just measure the central spin in the 0-1 basis, and you can get a W state. If you have a high number of spins, you will get states with total spin minus a half and plus a half. So you will have those symmetric states with nearly equal numbers of zeros and ones, but one extra one or one extra zero involved. So those are the things you will prepare. But we could not do, we cannot do a GHZ state or other kinds of states. So what can one do? Well, one can just use a higher spin inside to allow for more possibilities. Okay? And you have the same kind of interaction as before, only the X is replaced by the X operator for the higher spin. Okay, and then you have these kinds of states, where the bold up stands for a spin plus 3/2 and minus 3/2. So here there's a basis. If you measured in a superposition, in a basis, bold up plus bold down, and bold up minus bold down, you could prepare GHZ states as well. If you went to even higher stars and just increase this number in the middle, then you could prepare all the possible symmetric states, of course, with the probability of success. I mean, they're not perfect, so you have some probabilities of success. Now, this, the kind of states we can readily write down for graphs when we vary the number of the amount of the spin in each vertex. So we vary is actually just a generalization of the well-known AKLT thing, and this generalization done by Kirillov and Korepin in 1989, that if you have an arbitrary graph, okay, and say SG and SK are the spins in two of the vertices, okay, then the interaction in the edge, if it is of this type, this interaction projects the two spins to the maximum possible value, okay, then it's very easy to write down the ground states for this thing. And what I previously showed, just by luck, those interactions here turn out to be really spin-spin interactions of a single power. But in general, it can be more complicated. But one could look at a situation, for example, like a quantum internet. Okay, so in, since there are three edges coming into each vertex, you have a spin 3/2. Okay, and then this has kind of interesting ground states, where if you measure any two spins, you project the rest to a singlet. Okay, and whether you could prepare even more interesting multi-party states, I don't know. But one can just look at this whole state and try to look for some other states. Now, is this possible? So I'd like to end my talk with this thing, that suppose you have a very completely arbitrary graph, okay, and even arbitrary strengths of the interactions, okay, and you want to measure the rest of the spins, okay, in completely arbitrary basis, whatever basis you like. And you keep some unmeasured regions, okay? These unmeasured regions could be connected with through any number of edges, okay? Not necessarily that there has to be two or three or one line of interactions going through it. But when you do these arbitrary measurements, you will always project this region to a highly entangled state. And moreover, the entanglement of the two regions will grow as the size of the region grows, but does not depend at all on the number of links between the regions. Okay, so is that possible? Okay, and indeed it is, and you have to have very simple interaction for that. All you have to have is the swap interaction, which is the simplest spin half Heisenberg is a swap interaction. If you generalize the swap aspect of that rather than making the spins higher, so that you have q dips, okay, on each of those. On each of those vertices, you have q dips, okay, d-dimensional quantum systems. And the dimension of those quantum systems equals the number of vertices of the graph, okay? And the interaction just swaps the quantum state of two of those vertices. I just mentioned it can be physically realized in some case, very easily in Hubbard model with strong repulsion. then just by such nearest neighbor interactions, what happens is the lowest energy is each of these are permutation operators, and their eigenvalue, lowest eigenvalue is minus one. And if you have a state with all connections having minus one, then any two, even directly unconnected vertices, should give Pij minus one. That can be shown. So you are left with only a fully antisymmetric state of these d-dimensional systems as the unique ground state, no matter the structure of the graph. Okay, it has to be fully, it has to be connected. An unconnected part can just be thrown out. Okay, so example for three is given here, but this will happen if you have three vertices and three-dimensional quantum systems interacting by swap. So you go higher and you have these states again. And these have the unique property that if you measure, say here, if you measure the middle one in an arbitrary basis, you project the other two to a perfectly maximally entangled state. In general, if you have this, you measure whatever, they will go on to another kind of exactly locally similar to this kind of global singlet of these six things. And that entanglement of them also grow with the number here, okay? Does not depend on the number of connections. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Any more questions for Sugato? Dennis?
We go back to this symmetric graph where you we took one example.
Right. This is still work under progress. So we are sure about the result. We don't yet have a good experiment.
Do you know what happens if you have bigger graphs?
Yeah. It just works.
It's the same thing, right?
Yeah. It's for any n. Yeah.
For any n.
Yeah. So I just plotted for a few of the.
All right,
so
it seems to me that what you get is an effective Heisenberg interaction between two spins, right?
So what we get is, you can think of it as the following. So you have, you get an effective Heisenberg only after a certain time. In the middle time, it is entangled.
But when you increase the number of n, that should be more exact. I mean, you get an effective Heisenberg, which is with a time-dependent coupling, and then when you increase the number of n, then I guess this coupling should become constant.
The effect goes away with n.
Yeah,
that's true.
Exactly.
So let me tell you what it can exactly map to. So if these edges were not there, the edges between the other ones, then this would simply become like a three-spin model. This is connected to an effective spin, which effective spin is coupled to that. So goes to kind of three-spin models.
Yeah.
And three-spin models, we know for XY interaction, does a perfect transfer, like it pops and it pops to the other one. But we haven't been able to link it exactly to that, because there are these additional edges which are present. And also we have the Z.
I think in the large N limit, you should be able to find a duality transformation.
So there will be just an additional S squared term, where S is kind of a collective spin of these things, and somehow that is kind of not that bad for multiples of four initially, but in the large, there should be something.
First question is already asked by Yannis. In other words, actually, I think you need to really take to note as a correction to the very large N, which I think is the case, is to really find out the two parties, one or two, how many of those are connected, right? Because that's the crucial thing. If I take off another one, it will disrupt that immediately.
That's true.
That's the comment. But I have a question. It's a rather general thing, but I think you illustrated many of this, so maybe you have a very good insight to this. The question is, if you're given the entanglement pattern, let's pick the simplest, like this big chain, if I disturb any part, just one spin, and make some disturbance, like which just shines some light or something on it, how would the overall global sort of entanglement pattern depend on the local small perturbative?
I don't know about that. It's a very interesting question. I guess it has to do with, a lot of people are now studying non-equilibrium dynamics, so maybe that's the global dynamics. So individual local mixed states are like entanglement of one with the rest, right? I don't know much about Yeah, I mean, what happens to it? So if you're creating a just a disturbance,
yeah.
How
the reason why it's not directly just related to non-equilibrium dynamics that we usually follow is because, as you know, it's a quantum system.
That's true.
And entanglement is sort of a global property. I could change a little bit, and the whole global pattern could immediately change. And the question is, how stable is it, or how robust it is vis-a-vis some small disturbance?
Yeah, I don't know much about that thing. Maybe there are some. Yeah, what I can tell you is we have looked at bipartite entanglement. So if you say kind of create some disturbance in say the middle or somewhere in the chain, bipartite entanglement is created.
Yeah.
Now multipartite, yeah. It also, I mean, what we recently looked at is if you have a nil state, then you switch on an interactor and change the interaction so that the nil state is not the eigenstate. It will also churn out in time between the eggs. But we have no idea of the multipartite. So this is just bipartite.
Very delicate.
Yes.
Well, thanks to Sugato again for the talk.
Yeah.